everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up, your source for all things conservative. And I am here with my co-host, Mr. G. Mangani. And we are going to discuss today Ms. Kamala Harris and her interview with Fox News. Is that what we're going to touch on, the statement that CBS did in the real world we call CYA? But first of all, before we get to G here, do not forget, you can check out this podcast and others like it at grumbleatsmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms such as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. Mr. Mangani, it is not our normal Friday night. It is not a live stream. Have we been demoted or what? What's the deal here?
I don't know. I'm taking time away from my Sunday night football watching, but this is important, so we got to make it happen.
You know, this job is so time consuming. It is. In fact, I can't remember last Thursday about 10:30, 11 o'clock. I was like, oh my God, the game! You know, luckily it was just the Broncos just beating up on the hapless Saints, you know. But the reason people we wanted to do this podcast is we wanted to get our 2 cents and take it out on Kamala. Well, not really. We felt that this Fox News interview was important enough to talk about. He had some great points he wanted to mention, and we're realizing the cycle. We're still new at this, but we're realizing in this current cycle, there's just so much to talk about, and there's only so long we can do a live stream before we all fall on our face tired. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, G? Pretty much true, huh?
No, I mean, that last one was a long one, and we, you know, we had to call an audible and say, let's push this to Sunday, and it makes sense. We, you know, there was a lot to talk about in the last one, so, but this is, I think this Fox News interview was a turning point for Kamala. She was sliding downwards in the polls, and I think she thought she would turn it around by going on a, you know, enemy territory, so to say, and do something like this. And unfortunately, the inflection point was even faster to the downside. So I think it's important to discuss this.
I agree. Well, first of all, let's start off with before the interview even started. You know, the initial setup was scheduled Brett Baer. And for the record out there, I'm not a big Brett Baer fan. Brett Baer is part of the establishment, but he's as fair as they come. And the reason I say he's part of the establishment, I've watched his whole career, G, and he started off as a young, vibrant, handsome guy who would sit there and talk about it as he saw it.
With the chiseled jaw.
Yeah. So now he's like a politician, you know. He'll take the establishment. The way I say that is he had no issues. He didn't investigate at all. You could tell with his comments on 2020. I don't know if there was election fraud, but I know there was enough red flags I've seen firsthand from Panama in terms of the way they did some things towards the Blue Panel report that Jimmy Carter commissioned, to where like certain investigations should have been done and commissioned, but nobody wants it. And he did nothing. I guess what I'm trying to say is he has no more journalism integrity left. Not that he's a bad guy, meaning when you count on your teleprompter, your research team, and don't question them properly, you kind of left the train station. I think that's where he's at. He's in his later years, and you're right, the chisel jaw is gone. You know, 1 year he loses weight, the next year he can, you know, he's too, the suit's too tight. So I'm just not a fan anymore.
Well, I will say this for him. I really don't know where his politics lie, right? And you can tell by these other guys like Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. You know where they stand just by the questions that they ask and how they ask them and who they press, right? And with Brett Baer, he treats both sides pretty evenly, I think. So, you know,
I'll
disagree with you on that point. But, if I want to see an interviewer and I want to think it's fair, equal bashing of both sides, it's Brett Baer for me.
Yeah, and I wasn't implying that he doesn't do that. I'm glad you said that because you're right. I misconstrued my own words. He is that person. My take is a true journalist will look at before you go on stage and talk about any big issue, you're going to do some research on it. And that's right. What I don't think he does anymore. I thought the heyday of his show, and I'm drawing a blank, gosh, you know, I'm forgetting what it's called, but was when they had Charles Krauthammer out there. Yeah, Krauthammer, I loved his takes. You know, at the end of the day, he was part of the establishment too. you know, and the reason I say that, G, it's easy to talk a good conservative game versus live your life as one. People forget Krauthammer was a flaming liberal back in the day who slowly became conservative. And, you know, I'm just tired of everybody writing a book or spewing conservative talk. And, I mean, anybody could do that. It's like living your life as a conservative. So all these talking heads, I'm like, you don't really live your life as a conservative. So that's why when I say grassroots, those are people living their lives as a conservative. And I'm not knocking Brett Baer because you're right. He will give equal passion. And let's get into this, though. I apologize for taking too much time. So the Harris campaign reduced the interview time by, despite the initial agreement. She arrived 17 minutes late. I think my notes must be wrong. The Harris campaign reduced the interview time to about 20 minutes. Yes, that's correct. It was about a 20-minute interview. She arrived 17 minutes late. The interview was slated to start at 5 p.m. And then it just went worse. You know, it became a back and forth because she wouldn't answer the question. And she dodged the questions on border policy, Iran, Biden's cognitive decline, determination of Trump's remain in Mexico policy. And she does this every time. She shifts everything back to Trump, you know, when asked whether Iran, you know, that's been an ongoing Democrat tactic since Obama. What was Obama? I mean, his second term, what was he still doing? He was still blaming Bush, you know? So it's an old trope, but it works to their base. And it's taken, 15 years? It's starting not to work. Her interview was cut short, despite the late start. You know, the rumor mill is, stop, no boss, no boss, no, stop, stop. That's what they said, that they were waving the arms. And Baer noted the difficulty in managing the interview because of Harris's tactics. And what he means by that, people, is that's why he kept interrupting. He knew what she was doing. She was wasting time away, you know, and he had precious little time. That's why he kept interrupting. And that's pretty much about it. That was a setup for the interview. And I talked about how it went down. So what I just kind of explained is kind of the pre and how it went down. What are your thoughts, first of all, on the fact that she was running late? Do you think that was purposely done or do you think it was purely accidental?
No, I think absolutely it was purposely done. I think Brett Baer hinted at that. I mean, he didn't outright say it, but it's a power move, right? It puts someone back on their heels, the interviewer, that is. If they're feeling like, okay, I have 15 questions, and now instead of having 45 minutes, I only have 20 to 25 minutes. And so, yeah, I think that was a tactic to put him back on his heels so that you know, he would feel flustered and she would have the upper hand. And to be fair, Trump does this kind of thing as well. My friend Mike Slater, he's a radio talk show host here in San Diego, and he met with Trump, and Trump does a similar thing. I mean, he does the power move before the interview starts so that you don't feel like you have the, you know, the one up on him. And so that's what she was trying to do here, but she just can't pull that kind of thing off. I mean, I don't think people respect her.
Right. Before I forget, his show is the most the most unbiased. So my issue with Brett Baer is I believe he's lost some of his journalistic integrity just because he's been at the job so long. But his show is the most unbiased show on all of cable. I will defend that show. When me and Big John's not a fan, and I just told him once, I go, no, stop. Yeah, we can discuss things, but there's certain things I won't let you pretend you think you know when you don't know that show. Because people have opinions. What people do, they'll generalize the whole network and every show, you know, as that. And it is the one most unbiased show. How do you think Brett handled it? I mean, he interrupted a lot. He appeared rude, or maybe rude is too strong a word. I'm not blaming him. I'm saying that's how he may have appeared. But I just felt he had no choice, as you alluded to. You know, 45 minutes originally, 50 questions, I was down to 20 minutes. How do you think he did handle that?
I thought he did all right. I mean, I think he had to interrupt her, but, I mean, she wasn't doing that much better. So the first question, you know, and I know we're going to go through it, but the first question was, how many illegal immigrants came over in your 3.5 years? She started giving her word salad answer, and I think he's just like, wait a minute, That's not the question I asked. I want a number. What's the number, right? So that first question just threw off the rest of the interview. And I think by a certain point that we'll talk about later, it jumped the shark for Kamala. I think she got lured in, and then boom, it was like the Venus flytrap and she was trapped. And you could see that moment on her face.
See, I mean, that first question was Harbinger? Harbinger of what was to come. A terrible interview in terms of, you know, Obama mastered that. Trump may do it. I think Trump's still not a polished politician. Much more polished than his past, but Kamala is, I truly wonder how somebody like her, you gotta be smart to pass a bar. I don't care how bad a lawyer you are in the courtroom paper or whatever, but you gotta know your stuff at least for that one test. She seems like somebody who scored a 30 on her bar exam and you have to get an 80 to pass, and they just passed her. You know, I mean, she does not seem very intelligent. And her work, what I'm trying to say is Obama had the elegance to be 40 minutes in on one question on a 39-minute interview and go, oh, I'm sorry, we're done. You know, what just happened here? You know, she does it. Go ahead.
No, while we're on that subject, I just read this article. I just read it, and it was written in 2019 when she dropped out of the race. And there was an analysis of her failed race, right? And a lot of it was this imposter syndrome. She's so unsure of herself. She's insecure. She can't answer questions. She can't think in the moment. This is written 5 years ago. And I'm reading this going, this explains Kamala. That they're going to tell the truth when you're looking at the tombstone of a primary presidential campaign, right? The reporters will. They will tell the truth. Now they're not going to tell the truth. So you got to go back in history
and read this stuff
and go, oh, that explains it, because they're not going to write it because they're trying to get her, drag her across the finish line and win. And maybe we can link that in the description below. But that was a really interesting article to me.
Right, you know, I'm listening to, he does the circus, I forget his name. He does the circus on Showtime or one of those shows, Mark Halperin. You know, yeah. He's full of shit in the sense, you know, very unbiased, I'm not full of shit. Dude, I can pull out 10 of your posts you made that are Democratic, very biased. But, you know, he was saying the same thing. She's unsure of herself. And I think everybody's missing the point. Why is she unsure of herself? Because she wants to give the answer that pleases the most people, that shows her as a moderate. And people don't understand when it comes to politics, that's why I think conservatives have lost. Because a conservative goes up there, we try to play the moderate, they're not very good at it, and we get a lot of Kamalas. You know? Any final comments, G, on the pre-battle in Brett's performance in terms of how he handled it as a host?
No, the rest of it we can talk about when we go point by point.
All right, perfect. Let's set up the next clip then. First of all, I got to do this. I do not like to give due when there's no due to give. I want to give some props here to @VigilantFox. I was gathering all this stuff, G, and then I came across this. I'm like, oh, dear God, he's got all the ones I've been looking for. You know, he had a thread. So he's a good follow. You know, that's how you support the guy. You know, we're not stealing his work. All this is public. He just saved us the time of having most of those clips there already. So much love there to @VigilantFox. He's well worth a follow on X. Okay, so we're on the wrong track. In essence, G, that's what most Americans believe. We're not heading in the right direction. This clip we're going to show, this was one of the most important questions because according to the Kamala campaign, we are, you know, even if she doesn't say it, she's saying we're on the right track when she says she won't change Biden's policies, you know, et cetera. 79% of Americans believe the nation is on the wrong track. And this was the first question, I think, and it kind of just destroyed the rest of it because she didn't want any of these type of questions. And Harris trying to deflect. And Donald Trump has been running since, you know, and I'm like, does she understand? Nobody, one, nobody cares. Two, you've been president for 4 years. I think before we get to the 15, what's your take on the fact that they believe their own shit? They think that everybody's going to fall for it. But we're at a point, politics are cyclical. We're at that cyclical point where, no, your old tropes are no longer working because people don't care about hearing an old trope when they can't pay their damn bill. Your thoughts?
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, so the latest jobs report will show this surprise jump to the upside. And I think a lot of it were, I mean, there's 700,000 new government jobs. I mean, that's just, you know, at the flick of Biden's pen, let's just hire a bunch of people for the government and, you know, or governors deciding that as well. And, but people out there know that, okay, I don't have a job and they don't care about these statistics, right? So it doesn't matter if you fudge the statistics and then you revise them downward later. People know they don't have a job. They can't afford these expensive groceries. Cereal boxes are $6 a box, and they're sitting there going, okay, so you're going to tell me everything's fine or Bidenomics is working? So that's why you have 79%, because they don't look at the news and the statistics. They just look at their own personal situation and go, I'm not living the way I used to. And right. There is a fondness, right? I think it was CNN that said there's a fondness to Trump's first term when they could afford things and things were booming and they had a job.
That's right. In fact, I can't remember if it was the 90s. I read an article that they were asking these French college graduates, and they were stunned. Because none of them were interested. What are you looking forward to after you graduate? You know, thinking, hey, I want to work at this corporation, that corporation. It was like 60, 70% of them said, I'm hoping I can get a job in the government. We are entering that realm, you know, and that's not a good thing. And the other thing is, if I'm correct, and I'm pretty 99.9% sure I'm correct, I just can't remember, but they don't count food prices in the inflation report. That's not easy that does to analyze it. And that's where some of the costs have gone up to 70%, you know. So, you know, it depends on, I mean, sure, some maybe 3%, 5%, but there's some everyday items that people like that are up to 70% more. Eggs are astronomically higher. But anyway, let's get to this clip here, Mr. G.
That follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding
Madam
Vice President. You and I both know what I'm talking about. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade,
but
people have become.
You're the lever of power.
But listen, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me.
That follows.
Wow, it's gee, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I know what you know what I'm talking about, right?
You know, see, and what she failed to realize that first of all, her friend would have said, you know, you're right. I mean, CNN, you're right, and Trump's done this and Trump's done that, and yeah, baby, I know what you're talking about. She's in the South. Y'all know what I'm talking about, don't you? You know?
So there was something that short-circuited in her mind, because it really took me a while to figure out what I think she was talking about, right? And first of all, what I want to say is, and when she says, let me be clear, I mean, that means let me be clear as mud, because it's very confusing what she ends up saying, right? So I think after about an hour's worth of thought, which I should not have given it an hour's worth of thought, she was trying to say, I'm just trying to move on from the divisive rhetoric. The problem is we also hear the divisive rhetoric from her. We've heard it from Biden. Now Obama's coming out there saying, you know, black men, you're too afraid to vote for black women. Like, okay, I'm hearing more divisive rhetoric coming from their camp than I'm hearing from our camp.
You know, I think it's because they're unhinged. They know if there was still that one day of voting like when we were kids, we'd be talking about Trump possibly taking on 50 states. But because of voter fraud, I'm dead serious. I'm waiting for that pipe to burst somewhere. Pennsylvania has already come out and said they can take his days. Really? All of France, one of the most effed up nations, most corrupt nations in Western civilization, still does it in one day, you know? So I think they're trying to get the fix in, but it's too big to rig. I do believe that. Again, you know, red flags. I brought this point up, I'm digressing a bit, but I brought this point up to Big John. He didn't respond. But then later on in our show, well, no, William, there's no proof for this and that. I said, Big John, Andy Biggs had a hearing. for every election cycle since they started saving data on the servers, they've never deleted the data. Never, not once. Now they were subpoenaed. They got the subpoena, and then after they got the subpoena, they deleted the data. Oh, we were just cleaning up the server. That's all. You know, from all the past elections. Yeah, we always do that. So we says, no, we got all the data still there from all the previous ones. It was just this one. So, I mean, that to me is like, that's a red flag. So that's what I'm worried about. But I think we're seeing all this unhinged is that they're, and it's like they're throwing everything rhetoric, everything hateful out there, you know. But if you're Black America, look at the data. Which are, the TDS there is so bad, I had to convince somebody who is smarter than me, who said Trump had nothing to do with the economy. I said, he did from day one when he started removing these regulations that were hamstring. And I had to explain him. And this person already knew this as he grudgingly listened to me and still playing that point. But I think that's where you get out of the record. I mean, am I looking at it wrong?
No, I think, no, it's absolutely correct. And, you know, I agree. I don't have anything to add to that.
All right, why don't we do this then? Let's hear the clip first, the next clip first, and then
on we'll immigration, right? Point.
Yes, sir.
All right. We just have to stage it. There we go.
You know, voters tell pollsters all over the country and here in Pennsylvania that immigration is one of the key issues that they're looking at this election, and specifically the influx of illegal immigrants from more than 150 countries. How many illegal immigrants would you estimate your administration has released into the country over the last 3.5 years?
Well, I'm glad you raised the issue of immigration because I agree with you. It is a topic of discussion that people want to rightly have. And you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, but do you think it's 1 million, 3 million?
Brett, let's just get to the point. Okay, the point is that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired.
You know, voters tell.
Oh, my God. You know, gee, it's. She seemed to shift her stance on border security. I just look at it and I just shake my head because I'm like, you're just lying. I mean, what did you get out of that, actually?
Well, so she didn't want to answer the question. The question was how many came across the border during her time in office. And then she started filibustering, saying, I'm glad you asked that. That's what everyone's wants to talk about. Okay, well, that's true, but that's not the answer to the question. Then he says, well, you know, what's the number? Throw out a number. She goes, well, let's get to the point, which means let me get to a different point. Let me change the subject. Let me talk about what I want to talk about, because what she could have said is just owned it and then just throw Biden under the bus, which is what I would have done, and said, look, I wouldn't have done that. And I'm going to change it, and this is how I'm going to change it. But she didn't want to take responsibility. It's terrible. I think people saw that very terrible for her. This is the first question, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I agree. I agree. And what you're starting to see is, well, first of all, I want to get your point on this. I'm not digressing, but violence, was this a hate begets hate? Violence begets violence. During the summer of love in 2020, we had all this violence, $2 billion of property damage. Individuals were murdered. Individuals were maimed or hurt, wound up in the hospital. And Democrats promoted it and condoned it. And they used a lot of people used the George Floyd excuse to do these riots. And I kept telling my wife and anybody who listened, be careful, because this is going to bite you back in the ass. And now we're seeing these gangs, these illegal aliens. Where? In the urban areas. And people don't realize that Aurora is a very leftist city. You know, and you have New York City, Chicago, Boston, and all the gangs. Not only are they taking your tax dollars and using them that you're not getting, they're hurting you, maiming you, and killing you. So be careful what you wish for, because at the end of the day, these same Black Americans who now see the situation differently than they did in 2020 are realizing these Democrats don't care about me, and they don't. All they care is power and enrichment, and all you were, Black America, was a tool to be used. And now you're finally seeing it. And my long-winded point is, as these days are coming closer to the election, you're starting to see blacks, Latinos, us legal ones. every minority that they once controlled, and they're still going to win New York. They're still going to win Chicago, you know, Illinois, some of those states. But the numbers are trending in the wrong direction. And I think they're trying to salvage. That's why you're getting all this rhetoric, I think. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at what happened in Aurora and, you know, what was it, Marsha Raddick who asked J.D. Vance, fact-checking him, saying, no, it's not a widespread problem. It's only a handful of apartment complexes.
Oh, Martha Raddick.
Yeah. And he had to go, are you listening to yourself? Only a handful. Like, the acceptable number is zero.
Exactly.
And that's not just to J.D. Vance. That's just not to Donald Trump. It's to the Bloods and Crips. It's to the Hells Angels who drove out there. And in a show of unity, which I don't think those guys have ever been unified, they went out there to protect those apartment complexes. And, you know, there's an upswell of frustration, not only to just allowing these people to come in and you know, the ones that are criminals, violent criminals, I should say, doing crime. I'm talking about the other ones where Biden hands them a card and says, here's $10,000. Don't have to work.
Exactly.
Here's a nice hotel to stay up in. You can have your baby formula. You can have all your food or whatnot if they have a baby. And they're set up for, you know, however many months. And then meanwhile, you look at our homegrown American citizens or legal residents in North Carolina, and they're given a $750 check after that whole house is swept upstream, downstream, actually. And it's just like, what's going on here? The ones paying taxes don't get their money back, and the ones who never paid into the system, they get a nice EBT card or a credit card funded by the Bank of Biden and saying, hey, move here and live here. I think people are frustrated, and that's what he's talking about. What's the number during your time? What's the number? Because that was
added
to all the time before then, right?
No, you're right. And because of social, this is why they want to control the internet. Because of social media, what you're talking is economics. You're talking stuff they could hide pre-internet because they wouldn't talk about it on the talk shows. They wouldn't print it in the paper. And I'm sorry. I come from an uneducated background. My whole side of the family, they're all poor, you know, on both sides. You know, we were, and we're getting smarter, but they don't understand necessarily how your whole infrastructure can break down when you have an influx of 20,000 Haitians descending on a 60,000 man town. And because of technology and the internet, they're getting educated faster. So I think you're absolutely right. And I forgot, there is one base of people that I forgot that have completely switched and are not supporting Trump. Can't forget the cat and dog constituency. Vote for Trump, save my life, people. And I'm just kidding, people. I'm just kidding. I just can't resist, man. Those are some of the best AI images I've seen. They're like, we don't want no illegals.
I think dogs are underrepresented in that. I mean, you gotta, you know.
Well, dogs are already conservative. Those are Democrats walking over the cats, you know. I mean, how many cat ladies are there, you know? If I ever run for office, you're going to cut this clip. See, he hates us. No, I don't hate women. I just loathe feminazis. Like,
hey, my sister owns a cat. So, you know,
dude, you know,
that's my blood.
My parents have never had pets. And we saved this one cat. And my dad is just this nerdy, quiet man who you think if everything went south, he'd be the one who'd lose it and kill everybody, you know? Him and that cat were inseparable. Never seen my dad shed a tear for anything until that cat passed away at 11 years, you know? He loved his cat. All right. So let's go on to the next clip there. I mean, I'm sorry, do you have any final words? I think immigration is that in and of itself is one of the what do the candidates say? One of the holy, the three holy trinity type things, you know? It's one of the biggest things. And I think that at the end of the day, at its core, is what's destroying our campaign. What's your final
one thought I did have, which I believe it was the Trump-Harris debate which I wish Trump would have hit back on. There was a point that was made that Biden-Harris just undid, you know, I think it was like 50 Trump-era executive actions.
90-something.
Okay. But then Harris is saying, well, there's the border bill. I can't do anything until we get the border bill. No, if you can do stuff with executive action, do it, even if it's temporary. Stem the flow, right? Get the border bill across. But the reason why the first one, and Brett Baer said this, the reason why the first one didn't pass in 2021 is because it had mass amnesty. And yeah, we know the last time we passed the mass amnesty, it was the election before that, Ronald Reagan won 49 states. We don't have those kind of landslides anymore. After that mass amnesty, things got, you know, a lot more even. And so yeah, that's why it didn't pass. So, you know, I think just going to that point, you know, Biden and Kamala could say, look, I'm going to do this by executive action, stop the flow from the border. But she's not going to say that because she doesn't want to.
Right. No. I mean, you know, in 20 years, I've only heard one politician say this. When I had my small business, I started to realize, you know, Chamber of Commerce, they say they're a conservative and for business. They're not. And Carl DeMaio is the only candidate I heard say this. They are for big corporate business. They're not for the small business. And what does big corporations want? They want this free labor in the construction industry. They want this free labor in the, what do you call it, the farm industry. They want in the restaurant business. They want this cheap labor. So that's why that bill was created and supported by, because if you look at the Republicans who supporting a great voice, but a tall, walking ass looking guy, I forget, who was doing all the talking, it's Mitch McConnell. You know, that's how he does in front of a camera now. They were representing the Chamber of Commerce and their big corporate interests. So, and people may not like Carl DeMaio, and I'm a fan, but he was spot on. He's the only Republican. And people will argue with me on that. And I'm like, you can argue whatever the hell you want. The corporations want free or as cheap a labor. In fact, they're saying that right now. I just saw an article today, that the construction industry does not want mass deportations. You will destroy our grid. Housing will be more expensive. No, housing is expensive for everything. But, I mean, every factor that has to do with the cost of a house is external. And if you got rid of most of those factors, housing prices would come down. That, and you got to stop the Black Rocks of the world from buying these up in big bulk rates. Your thoughts before we go on to the more immigration
one? No, Mark Cuban came out with this, you know, how would your vegetables be cheap if we started deporting illegal immigrants? And that was a tweet on X. And I responded, I think you're making the case against a minimum wage.
Yeah.
Because he just needs to sit and think about it and go, okay, minimum wage, our prices would be too high for food. So I think he's making the case for either slavery or virtual slavery or doing with minimum wage. And I don't know. So I tweeted that back. Of course, he's not going to respond to me because checkmate, or maybe I'm just too small of a guy.
I'm in Reelsville. That when they say that, that's because they've lost the argument. And they go, the price is going to be more expensive for you. I'm like, do you want Americans to be working and have jobs? Here's my take, Gene, is those jobs picking the field, working the horse stable, wherever, you know, is they're made for that young American male or female. Get off your ass, son. Daughter, you're going to go learn how to flip burgers. I don't want you. Well, you're going to learn some damn accountability and responsibility. You know, that's what those jobs are for. You know, and my point, look at what we talked about last week. Our graduation rates, you know, our kids, their brains are turning to mush because they're gaming. There's some studies that have been done that shows the dopamine affects how negative it is with so much gaming. And we're destroying our youth. You know, get your ass. Gene, I don't know, how old are you, Gene?
51.
Okay, so you're the same era as I am. I'm 57. Where when we were kids, how did mom and dad tell you that it's time to come in? They opened their front door. Well, hey, get out. And then it was like that chain reaction. Hey, your dad's on. Hey. You know, it's like somebody, you know, the closest pass it on. It's time for you to go home, you know? Because right, we were outdoor kids. We grew up. We were the greatest generation in terms of having nothing in terms of technological to be there at the beginning, seeing how cool it was to enjoy the fruits of it today. You know, every other generation since ours was born into it already. You know, so, you know, if there's something unique about living a full life, being able to go outside, being able to play, being the old school stuff, you know. But anyway, let's move on to the next tip, which is more integration in terms of her stance on border security.
One than Gary. Okay. Rachel.
There should be one before that one, Gene. Oh, no. I did not, I like a moron, did not put the link in. Real quick, how do you think she handled the border security, was just another mess similar to the, her deflecting. And what, I apologize. I thought I had that one in there, and I guess I did not. We'll go to the Nikki Riley one. But for the audience, what happened was she shifted her stance on border security, talking about how good they were doing on border security. And geez, we both know what they started doing is enforcing border security over the last 6 months to give the perception that, and then they lie. Oh, we were strong on border security from day one. And Bear countered that narrative by pointing out that this is where you were talking about. How the administration has swiftly reversed numerous Trump-era border policies into executive actions. And that caught her off guard. And, again, I'm doing a better word sound than she does. At least you can understand me. Oh, he's just a dumbass. With her, you gotta wait a couple seconds and like, what the hell is she saying, bro? Yeah. But that was a good point. So we'll move on to the Lincoln Riley, one. And I apologize to the audience. That was a powerful piece there. The Lincoln Riley one.
Jocelyn Nungary, Rachel Morin, Lakin Riley, they are young women who were brutally assaulted and killed by some of the men who were released at the beginning of the administration, well before a negotiated bipartisan bill. Former President Clinton actually referred to Lakin Riley Sunday, campaigning for you in Georgia, saying if those men had been properly vetted, Lakin Riley probably would not have been killed. So if it wouldn't have happened, this is well before any negotiation. This is well before Donald Trump got involved in the politics. This is a specific policy decision by your administration to release these men into the country. So what I'm saying to you, do you owe those families an apology?
Let me just say, first of all, those are tragic cases. There's no question about that. There is no question about that. And I can't imagine the pain that the families of those victims have experienced for a loss that should not have occurred. So that is true. It is also true that if a border security had actually been passed 9 months ago, it would be 9 months that we would have had more border agents at the border, more support for the folks who are working around the clock trying to hold it all together.
Madam Vice President.
To ensure that no future harm would occur. And this election in 20 days will determine whether we have a president of the United States who actually cares more about fixing a problem, even if it is not to their political advantage in an election, because there was a solution, Brett.
Madam Vice President, it was a policy decision in the early part of your administration. I will let one of the mothers talk about it. Take a listen.
Because of the Biden-Harris administration open border policies catch and release, they were enrolled in the Alternatives to Detention program. This meant that they were released into the United States. It was not even a full 3 weeks later that they would take my daughter, Jocelyn Nungary's life. I believe the Biden-Harris administration open border policies are responsible for the death of my daughter.
That's the early days. So do you owe them an apology is what I'm saying.
I will tell you that I am so sorry. I'm so sorry for her loss. Sincerely.
She put up the image of the three young girls that began at the beginning, just as kind of just growing.
Let's see.
Right there. Look at the one on the left. I want people to understand. We're not talking like college kid or college age where they can sit there and say, well, she did want it or this, whatever. That's a child. I mean, that, I don't know how old she is, but she looks to be, 12, 13 years old, maybe 14 tops. You know, the one in the middle looks like a college person. What is it with women? but then the sneak and run looks like late teens, early 20s. But that first one, that's what they're doing. You know, that's what they're doing. So he confronted her, and I thought it was phenomenal. And again, she went back to the, see this, she, so normally if this was CNN, they would have stopped and agreed with their, what she said about the border. But, you know, you're right. So why didn't the Republicans, why did Trump kill that bill? Why did Trump do this? Why did Trump do that? You know, they would have helped her out. Brett let her speak her piece, and then what they would call a gotcha, trying to take her out, they would say, was the actual question that should always be followed up by any reporter. Your thoughts?
She's in a tough position. I mean, the answer to Brett Baer's question, which he asked twice, right, about a minute apart, was, do you owe an apology to these families? And both times she responded with, I'm very sorry for their loss, right? And if I know you well enough, William, I do the same thing. I'm like, I'm sorry you feel that way. I've said that, right? You get an argument with the wife. I'm sorry you feel that way. That doesn't work.
It just sets them off.
It's like, you know, you didn't say sorry. You said, I'm sorry you feel that way. That's what she's saying. I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm sorry you lost your daughter or whatnot. And, you know, but she's in a tough position because she can't say, yes, it's my fault. It's our fault, because she knows that's a Trump campaign commercial as well. And so what she tries to do is deflect back and say, well, if they had passed this border security bill, we would have had more border agents. And then, you know, he brings it right back. Well, no, I'm talking about 3 years ago, not 9 months ago. And you can argue that 9 months ago, back in March, what they were trying to do is just pass something for the election, right? So they can be tough on the border. So, you know, it's ridiculous. Her policies have always been, open the border, give them free health care, free sex changes, free this and that, and which, you know, some of that they're already doing. And real people are getting hurt, killed in the process. And, you know, my dad came here from India, right? I'm an immigrant. I actually was born in Canada. So I'm not homegrown American. I'm an adopted, naturalized American. My dad did not advocate for 1 billion Indians coming here and turning this place into India, right? Because that's why he moved away from there. He didn't want to be there anymore. So if we're just going to throw open the gates and let people walk in and have no vetting, which I believe every other country, except for the European Union, every other country vets who comes in. I mean, if I want to go to India, they're going to examine me. I need to get a visa to go over there. So no, she doesn't want to own up to it, and I don't think she can own up to it. So she's left with, well, you know, back in March, Trump stopped this border bill. But, you know, if you're just going to hand out citizenship to people, yeah, don't pass that border bill. It's terrible.
Again, I put the blame of that on the corporate-backed Republicans. That border bill should never have been created. It's kind of like when Rubio showed his true hand with the Group of Eight or whatever it was called, with his form of immigration. There is no compromise, people. Take it. My mom's a naturalized citizen. Oh, and to push back, and it's your family, so who am I to push back? But I would probably think your father did not want to leave India, but it was the political situation and the way of life. Because I know my mom, he just did not want. He didn't want to live anymore.
I know you have a story, but let me just tell you this story real quick.
When he was nine,
I think he was 8 or 9, his dad, my grandfather, hooked him up with his uncle. So that would have been my grandfather's twin brother, to sell shoes. So he's out there selling shoes in between school on the street. And some guy said, I don't want your shoe, and kicked him. And he's just like, screw this, I want to go to America. The streets are lined with gold there, right? Like, he made a determination at that young age, whatever he heard in his mind about the fairy tales of America, that's why he wanted to come here. He was done with India, and he wasn't even 10 yet.
So yeah, so wow, that's incredible. Like my mom, when I asked her, "Hey, mom, would you want to go?" She's 85. Do you want to go back to Panama? Do you want to die there? She goes, "No, I'm American now. I like my hot water." Yeah. Okay. Now Brett Baer did kind of have some breaking news here. Of course, it wasn't published. Let's play the next clip. Kamala Harris's stance on Biden's policy.
It's interesting you said turn the page, Madam Vice President. You were asked on two different shows last week what, if anything, you would do differently than President Biden. Here's what you said.
Would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact.
Under a Harris administration, what would the major changes be and what would stay the same?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden.
I know.
And so that would be one change in terms of, but also I think it's important to say with, 28 days to go, I'm not Donald Trump.
So you're not Joe Biden, you're not Donald Trump, but nothing comes to mind that you would do differently?
Let me be very clear. My presidency will.
Go back a couple of seconds. I want to point this out so we'll talk about it. Look at her body language. Go back just a couple of seconds when she sits back.
Right here?
Right there.
Okay, yeah.
Trump, but nothing comes to mind that you would do differently?
Let me be very clear. My presidency will not be a continuation of Joe Biden's presidency.
Okay,
and
right there.
What's that?
Right there, because she threw him under the bus. My presidency will not be a continuation of Joe Biden. That's why everybody didn't note that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
New president that comes in to office, I will bring my life experiences, my professional experiences, and fresh and new ideas. I represent a new generation of leadership. I, for example, am someone who has not spent the majority of my career in Washington, D.C. I invite ideas, whether it be from the Republicans who are supporting me, who were just on stage with me minutes ago, and the business sector, and others who can contribute to the decisions that I make about, for example, my plan for increasing the supply of housing in America and bringing down the cost of housing, addressing the issue of small businesses, which is about working with the private sector to bring more capital and access to capital to our small business leaders, including my plan for a $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers and for small businesses, extending the tax deduction from $5,000 to $50,000.
We've heard a lot about those plans.
No, this is a good stuff. We heard a lot about these plans. The economist says, "F you, that ain't gonna work, woman." So I wanted you to show the body language because she took her.
Okay, let's go back to that. Right about. Here.
Oh, you're
right. Yeah. Years ago, I'm not Donald Trump.
So, you're not Joe Biden, you're not Donald Trump, but nothing comes to mind that you would do differently?
Let me be very clear.
Her arms crossing was the equivalent of people when they do this. She was uncomfortable. She was actually online. She was angry. And she's like, she's stealing up, getting ready to prepare for the answer, which was nothing but a word salad. But she said, "I am not going to be Joe Biden." That's the first time I've heard her in any interview say that. As we saw the previous two interviews, she pretty much said she's going to follow him. He's done nothing wrong. In the Corbett one, she's saying, "Well, I'm not Joe Biden." She's talking about how she looks. She's trying to make a joke out of it. Oh, yeah, you're not. Look at her. You can just see her whole body language. I read a book on how to read people, and that's just, she's exhibiting all the traits of somebody who's angry, is uncomfortable, and does not want to talk about what they're talking about. First of all, you keep saying she's in a tough position. You don't keep saying you said it. But that's the idea, is it's not that she's in a tough position. She's finally been asked the proper questions, and she's just totally unprepared for how to handle the tough position as she was here. She just started signing inspiration. She just started how she's going to give shit away. At the end, I'm going to give that to black people, to my underserved, to this, that. She's trying to buy her vote. Yeah, what are your thoughts on this before we move on?
Yes, I think there's enough information out there that the Harris and Biden camps don't like each other. And in fact, I can't remember the woman's name, but she advised Harris not to go to the Alfred E. Smith dinner, which every presidential candidate goes to. But that person was a Biden person. And there's a little bit of civil war. There's a lot of animosity between the two. So she can't come out right and say anything negative about Biden, because I think they're on the verge of civil war, right? And, you know, I'm going to do a video on my take on what's going on there. But if she comes out and says, I'm not, Biden's policies have been disastrous, then she risks them totally sabotaging her, which I think they're slightly sabotaging her, but I think they would totally sabotage her. So she can't come out and say anything other than this. But I think there's another reason why she's saying this. If you think back to 2008, Obama's slogan was, yes, we can. What did that mean? Yes, we can. Yes, we can what? Right? And Obama himself never said it, but everyone else was saying it. We can elect the first black president. Right? It wasn't about his character. Yeah. It was about his skin color. Right? Yes, we can. Yes, we can what? We can elect the first black president. So what is she saying here? Well, I'm not Joe Biden. What does that mean? Well, that means, okay, well, she'll continue on his policies, but in a different skin, right? A black female skin. And it's like, I think that's what she's trying to say, but it's not very articulate. And so people just kind of leave that with, okay, things are terrible right now. And you're saying you wouldn't change anything except for you're a different person. And it's not coming across very well, but that's what she's trying to say. I'm black. I'm woman. This is why you need to vote for me. I am not this old, crusty white guy. That's, I think, what she's saying.
She's an old, crusty Indian, black, SA, Southern, urban, whatever woman. Well, she has not aged well. I mean, we are, in fact, you know, this is her last gasp. But she can't speak her way to anything anymore, especially with the way she looks now.
Oh, yeah, by the way, it's her birthday today. Happy 60.
Ooh.
She's 60.
I thought she was 65. Look.
Well, Waltz, I thought he was like 80, but Waltz is 60 as well.
Oh, God. Look, there's only 3 years that separate us from Waltz, separates me from Waltz people. Look at that.
You know, growing up, All in the Family, what was that guy's name? Archie Bunker?
Yeah.
I think he was like 50, 51.
Well, that was the era of smoking and blue-collar work. I mean, life was fog, everything, you know. There were so many guys. And, but you're right. I was looking at people in the 50s, college Heisman. There was a college Heisman. And I'm like, damn, they look like they're in their 40s. They're college kids. There's also a negative to it. We may laugh, but yeah, we look younger. Our testosterone levels are much lower today than they were back then, you know. So it's not always good, you know. And let's be honest, if you're young and single, do you want to look like Michael J. Fox or Tom Selleck, you know? So you want that testosterone to get higher. You parents got to stop eating processed steroid-filled chickens. Yeah, you got to stop giving your kids these puberty blockers. You know?
I think RFK Jr. will help with that.
Okay, yeah. So what I'm going to say, Kamala, is her downside, and for every future black woman, black man, et cetera, is Obama broke the barrier. But what made it bad for them is Obama was a terrible president. He did not. In fact, you're hearing the pushback. We heard that the other day when these young black men, they were kind of like, "Yeah, I made a mistake voting for your ass here in 2008 as it was," you know. And so when times are tough, they don't care what skin color. I've told you this, told you in the net this, and that being our co-host to the audience. When my dad was having a conversation with a black guy, a fellow military guy, he was saying, you know, I'm voting for Reagan in 84. You're ready for second term. He goes, my wallet's fatter or something like that. Like what he was saying is his dollar, because he's in the military, he's on a fixed, you know, every 2 weeks. What he was saying is his dollar, he could buy more with his dollar. So when times are tough, that's what people, it's the economy, stupid. And that's why I'm disappointed in Trump has campaigned right. But everybody on the under ticket is really hoping to grasp his coattails. Because I think at the end of the day, we got some bad campaigners out there. The final word on this clip before we go to the TVS run amok.
No, I'm good. I'm ready to move on. Here we go. Okay, here we go.
I'm sorry, and with all due respect, that clip was not what he has been saying about the enemy within that he has repeated when he's speaking about the American people. That's not what you just showed.
Well, he was asking about that specific...
No, that's not what you just showed, in all fairness and respect to you.
I'm telling you that was the question that we asked him.
You didn't show that, and here's the bottom line. He has repeated it many times, and you and I both know that. And you and I both know that he has talked about turning the American military on the American people. He has talked about going after people who are engaged in peaceful protest. He has talked about locking people up because they disagree with him. This is a democracy. And in a democracy, the president of the United States, in the United States of America, should be willing to be able to handle criticism without saying he'd lock people up for doing it. And this is what is at stake, which is why you have someone like the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying what Mark Milley has said about Donald Trump being a threat to the United States of America.
He's quoted in the Bob Woodward book that way, yes. Let me ask you this, Madam Vice President. You call Donald Trump, he's misguided. You say now
he's unstable. He is unstable, but
he's not well. You say he's mentally not stable.
He's not stable.
Let me ask you this.
Wow. They called him a fascist. They called him a Nazi. They called him racist. They said if he gets elected, we'll enter World War III. That he's in a cognitive decline. And I think the next segment talks about that. All kinds of things. That's where she was at her best, though, with the hate, because she's practiced that and she said it over. That's where she looks strong, because CNN, MSNBC, all those vajayjays and those pajama boys, Jake Tapper and Mr. Rachel Maddow, they've all egged her on. So she's got that line. The problem is all of America, once that first assassination attempt happened, all of America realized, yeah, the rhetoric. You know, what I'm saying is even Democrats who are like, yeah, the Democrat rhetoric has caused all this. So that's why she got so angry. She knew where he was going. So she went back to hear her old tropes. I mean, her TDS was a rival to our good friend Big John. And that's, I saw somebody who was, she said he's unstable. Nobody really thinks that Trump is unstable, except the ones that are so far left that even Democrats distance themselves from them. So for her to say that, to me, shows how desperate and how much she hates Trump. And why does she hate Trump? She hates Trump because Trump is actually accomplished and is everything she's not. She slept her way to the top. She was hand-chosen after they picked her up off her knees, literally. Okay, I got you on your job here. I like what you did. That's been her whole career. That is who she is. Trump, you may not like Trump, but Daddy did not give him $2 billion. He earned that. She is everything he is not, and I think that's what came out in that. And that's not just her. That's Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban may be richer than Trump by $4 billion, but Trump has made his mark in history. All Mark Cuban will go down as somebody who scammed Yahoo for a couple billion that was one of 10 zillion former team owners, NBA owners. So I think that just showed how the left views Trump.
Yeah. I wish he had shown this amount of anger and passion. Do you see her? I mean, you can see the scowl on her face, the finger pointing. I wish she had shown that when they were talking about the border and Lake and Riley being killed, or the fact that people are hurting, or that we're paying for sex changes in prisons. Like, she didn't show any anger for any of those things.
I guarantee you, I know what anger.
Say again?
No, I guarantee you the only anger they showed is that the mother bleeper got caught. Man, he got caught speaking loud enough for us. That's the anger they showed.
I wish that she had shown it for that, right? Maybe people would have said, oh, okay, now she feels our pain. But what does she show anger for? The TDS, like you said, Donald Trump. Now, what he Trump was referring to when he said the enemy within is all the lawsuits and all the you know, the convictions, right? Yes, he got convicted 34 times by a bunch of Democrats sitting on the jury.
The political persecution is what you're
right. referring to. That's what he's talking about. And people don't deny that that's what's happening. So she tried to say, well, that's the wrong clip or whatever. But we already know the game, right? You just take something and twist it out of context, like the Charlottesville thing. And they don't think that people will just Google and say, Charlottesville, what did Trump really say? And watch
well, it. You can't. Hold on, Gene. You can't. Because when you Google something like that, all the positives from the left comes up. Yeah.
Right. No. Okay. Fair enough. But you can go to YouTube and look up the actual video and watch it. And then there you go. Oh, that's not what he said. So, but yeah, fair enough. Google does block certain search terms or whatnot. So, you know, my main thing is just show some passion and anger for the way things are, the way things are in this country right now. Well, what happened in Afghanistan?
Don't you think right. you're asking her to show anger for something she isn't angry about because she doesn't care? Honestly,
but she tries to act. She tries to act. This country is so amazing. The hopes and dreams and aspirations and like, okay, well, practice some anger.
But that's just it. She's not angry because she doesn't view that as an issue. Because those are the people who she wants here to become Democrat voters. So she's okay with a few little deaths. And here's what I meant to say earlier. I always tell my Democrat friends, because they show the three, they're all white girls. You know, I've gone back, I grew up in North Carolina, where 67% of all of America's black lives, 67%. And back in the day, it was even higher. You know, because people forget in the Civil War, after slaves were free, they were still broke. So most of them stayed in the South. You know, and I've had this conversation where they'll bitch and complain, you only show pretty white girls, a lot of black girls. I go, you're right. I go, but you don't look. I go, I have a big cold case, these murder mysteries. And when they always show the mass hunt to try to find whoever's missing, there's always mostly whites looking for that black child. You want to hate on somebody, it's your Democrat media that doesn't show the picture or make a case into that poor black child. Yeah. So when I saw the three pictures, you know, that was the first thing I thought of. And I just wanted to point out to my friends who are Latino and black, the media isn't your friend. Y'all still in squalor in terms of a big chunk of the demographic. And you think the media's there to help you, they're not. You know, but you're right, she, I thought her TDS, that she got angry. And then she was pissed because he played a clip that she didn't want played, is what it boiled down to, you know. All right, let's get to the second to last video with the busted. Trump is like what, the second part of where it stopped at.
He's unstable.
He's not well. You say he's mentally not stable.
He's not stable.
Let me ask you this. You told many interviewers that Joe Biden was on his game, that ran around circles on his staff. When did you first notice that President Biden's mental faculties appeared diminished?
I just want to pause it right there.
But she did her defense. That's a common expression for her throughout her career. But no, you're right. That look there, in all seriousness, on King aside, that look there is one of, she's stunned. In that moment, and I apologize, that's what you're trying to point out.
So here, right, bashing Trump. Even Brett Baer, you called Trump unhinged or whatever. Look at her eyebrows, right? She seems pleased and,
exactly.
and the endorphin, yeah. the dopamine, right?
Yeah.
Then it goes to Biden, and then all of a sudden, yeah, so I'll play from here.
Joe Biden, I have watched from the Oval Office to the Situation Room, and he has the judgment and the experience to do exactly what he has done in making very important decisions on behalf of the American people. Joe Biden is not on the ballot.
I understand.
And
but,
Donald Trump.
But
is,
you talked about it.
And Donald
After
Trump
After George
is,
Clooney said within a few minutes of talking to
Donald
President Biden
Trump,
at a fundraiser that he thought this
Brett,
was not the same
Brett,
Joe Biden that we saw on the
Donald
debate stage.
Donald Trump is on the ballot.
I understand. You met with him at least once a week for 3.5 years. You didn't have any concerns?
I think the American people have a concern about Donald Trump, which is why the people who know him best, including leaders of our national security community, have all spoken out, even people who worked for him in the Oval Office, worked with him in the Situation Room, and have said he is unfit and dangerous and should never be president of the United States again, including his former vice president, which is why the job was open for him to choose another running mate. So that is a fact. That is a fact.
So she pivoted well enough and handled herself once again with Joe Biden. But here's the problem. The problem is Trump is really counted as well. I fired these people. That's what they hate me. I mean, they're going to gas it. Who did they fire? Nobody. You know? So he's counted that well. And she's right. Joe Biden isn't running. But the reason she's running is because of Joe Biden's mental cognitive decline. And the fact that they probably can't count on what he'll be good in terms of public anymore. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's this thing called the honeypot trap, right? And in reference to a plant that has sweetness in it, and a insect, I think a bee will get in there and then get stuck, and then there's food for the plant, right? That's what happened there. I mean, he started saying, "You called Trump unstable and unhinged," and she's like, "Yeah." And that's why I stopped it there, because you could see her facial expression. She was excited. That was like a very genuine moment, right? And then when he started talking about Biden, her face frowned, and she's like, "I do not want to go into this." And the reason why is she knows that her advisors are pretty smart in terms of this. Like, she can't admit that, yes, she did see it early on, right? Because then she has to now admit that she hid it. Or she can't admit that she never saw it, because that's just not believable. But then that calls into question her credibility, right? Like, her intelligence. Like, you couldn't see Biden was having some problems mentally. So, yeah, then she just goes Trump, 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 Trump. Biden's not on the ballot. But no, Harris is on the ballot. And the question was really about, is she just incompetent or is she a liar? That's what Brett Baer was getting at. She didn't want to answer.
You know what that reminded me of? That, you know, after talking in the beginning and then after the interview, everything we found out, that reminded me of this. Do you remember that scene? Throw the damn towel in! Throw the damn towel in! That's a watching scene where Drago is killing Apollo. Man, then he said, throw the damn towel in! Yeah. Because that's what Brett was saying. That was at the end where her eggs were like this. Like, no moss! No moss! But that's
no, I think this was... This was probably the worst part of it. And then she went into the Iran thing, which, you know, we're not going to talk about that, but there was just no answer there. And that's when her handler's like, done, call it off.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Iran thing. You're aware of that one. What happened?
No, I don't remember the exact question, but she went into this word salad, which wasn't answering anything. And I think at that point, they just probably her advisors in the back were reading the Twitter feeds. I think that's what was going on. And you saw Megyn Kelly responding and Colin Rugg and these people whose tweets go straight to the top, and it was not going well. Yeah. So that's, I think, by the word salad of Iran, they're just like, let's end this right now. And so that would have been about a few minutes before. I think they said they needed to wrap it up by 5:45 so they could get the tape over to air at 6 o'clock.
Is that the one in terms of she failed to enforce sanctions?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the point is he talked about her not enforcing sanctions, and what she pivoted back to Donald Trump. Yeah. And it's just another word salad. It was just bad. It was just bad overall. Let's wrap up this interview before we go to the quick 60 minutes and the excerpt they gave. She did not handle herself well. She should have known what was going to happen, but I think she she just thought for some reason she was going to have an easy interview. I don't think she thought Bret Baier had to go on as to give her a tough interview. Some people tried to say, well, she was talking to her base, and she looked good for her base. So there were two trains of thoughts on the internet, on social media for her camp. One, it was a gotcha job. I forget the term, you know, but they were there to get her. They were there to get her, you know. And the other one was, it was like, she was brilliant. Did you see her taking the breath? Really? It's kind of like reminding me of Obama. Do you hear of elegant Obama was? Yeah, he's reading off a prompter to the national for that question. So they're going to spin it. What did you think of Barack?
I think you look at Pauly Market. And the betting odds increased for Donald Trump by like 3 cents and decreased for her by about 3 cents. So I think the people out there speak with their money. They know that that was a big boo-boo for her. And Bret Baier himself said afterwards, I think she wanted to come out and have a viral moment that she could put out on social media. And I think she got it. But I think he meant in the bad case, right? Like, yeah, she got a viral moment, but it's not going to work in her favor. It's going to be a viral moment against her campaign. And I think this was like pretty much like she had to turn her campaign around, and I think this just made it worse. And then you add on to that, the next day she didn't show up to the Alfred E. Smith dinner like I referenced. And then you add on to that, the next day some person says Jesus is Lord, yells it out, and she goes,
yes!
You don't belong in this rally. You need to go to Donald Trump's rally. And it's like,
and the one down okay, the road.
We are not, the Christians are not welcome.
And see, in that moment, she slipped up. She was so into the moment of awe and anguish. She's like, they're on their knees for me, not me on my knees. Oh, yeah, mama. You know? So she was so caught up in that moment. The truth set her free, showed the world. And you're right. I meant to ask you back from a couple of the segments, she hasn't done thrown Biden under the bus. This interview with Baier was the closest I've seen her. Is she afraid? I mean, does Biden actually have support? He did get 14 million primary votes. So I assume there's a small segment that's upset he's not running and feels that she took him out. Do you think she fears that? That voter block? Is there that voter block out there?
I don't think it's that voter block. I think it's, look, Biden is not in the country right now. He's in Europe. This is the last 2 weeks, right? So Obama, Michelle and Barack are both on the campaign trail, but he's not. Jill is not. I mean, there is civil war in their camp. And I read something on Axios that actually mentioned that as well. Her campaign is now kind of like an amalgamation of her advisors, Biden's advisors, and one or two Obama guys in there. And they're all at odds with each other. And, I mean, Biden, Obama, they haven't been on good terms either. So right, no, right. I think what she's afraid of is the Biden – I mean, I think Biden's already been sabotaging her a little bit, you know, wearing the Trump hat. And hosting his first ever press conference right when she goes on, I believe it was The View. I think it was that day. She went on The View at the same time. And I mean, if that's not a sabotage, what else is, right? So, but he could go even further. And I think he's playing both sides. He's like, I want it to be known that I was, you know, I've tried hard for the team. But not really, because he wants to be able to say, I was the only one who could beat Trump, and they took me out, and it's all Kamala's fault.
Right, right. I think, and here's what people forget, Obama didn't want her neither. They wanted to set up a convention vote, you know, because he knew she was a weak candidate. And look, Obama doesn't want anybody who's black to follow him so closely. There's something special about him being the first black president, and it gets diminished the more. I mean, that's just natural. It has nothing to do with black. It's when you do something the first time, that's what the accolades, and then it happens, and then it diminishes and everything. Obama's one of those types that 50 years from now, history will correct itself to a degree on the type of campaign he had. And you're right. I think that Biden is going to Europe is better than not. And here's why. Look, Obama does not hold the sway he once did. You saw that with all the backlash he got, you know. And remember, Blacks are having a battle internally. We're not monolithic. But I'm going to vote Democrat, you know. So, again, at the end of the day, where they would normally vote monolithic, and I'm talking politically because I'm in the truth, and when you have 90% every cycle that votes Democrat, that's a monolithic block, you know. But now, what changes that? It's always the economy. And that's what Obama's dealing with. So he's got a backlash, and it looks bad. Not only on him, and the only reason Obama is hitching to Kamala is Biden is done. So there's no reason for him to waste any political capital in supporting Biden. And Biden was forced on Obama from the good old boys. Yeah, we'll support you, Barack and Hillary, but things are going your way, but you got to take Biden. You know, Biden was their anchor to Obama. And, you know, oh. And it doesn't help when Bill is out of the game. Well, Obama gets a backlash. Biden's too demented to realize what he's saying half the time. And Bill's like, well, yeah, you know, they've been better properly there. You know, maybe they would not have died there. You know, look at the songs on that reporter. Hey, you know, that's Bill Clinton, you know? And, so I don't know. I mean, am I wrong here? It's like, you're going to have a video on what's been happening in terms of your thoughts on that. But I look at those three guys and I'm like, oh, dear God, even if they're trying to help you, they're killing you, you know?
Yeah. No, my video will be on Pelosi, the Clintons, Biden, the Obamas, and Governor Newsom, and kind of what I think their stances are. But I do agree with you in terms of Barack Obama. I think he didn't come out and endorse Harris immediately, right? Because I think he knew she would be a weak candidate, and he wanted to choose the best candidate because I think in the end, he wants the Democrats to win. That's his thing. So now that's why he's getting out there, putting out all the stops. He wants the Democrats to win. But, you know, there's a silver lining either way. If she loses, you know, Michelle Obama can run in 2028, even though she said she's not interested. So, you know.
By then, it'll be different. Real quick before we go on to this final segment. I had no clue. What's the story with Tim Walz? I think Shapiro said no. You know, he saw the writing on the wall. My career, because look at Tim Kaine. The all loser VPs rarely ever forge your own path after being attached to a losing presidential campaign. I mean, what are your thoughts? And plus, I also believe there's some truth to this. You know, it's Obama went with Biden. Because he was smarter than Biden. Biden went with Kamala because he was smarter than Kamala. Kamala went with Walz because he's just a dumbass. I really believe there's some truth to that. But I think Shapiro saw the writing on the wall, and she doesn't like a strong man, in my opinion, as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, they say the dumber because it's assassination insurance, right? The alternative is not better, and that's where Trump's different, at least this time around. With J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is the future of the party, for sure. I think, and I read this article and I couldn't find it, but there was an article of like 8 different people on the shortlist for VP, and I think 6 of them declined.
Wow.
And then at some point, yeah, 6 of them declined. And Gretchen Whitmer was, I know for sure she declined because she actually put out a tweet saying, I need to focus on Michigan. But she was one of the people on the top. But,
no,
when
but she never said she was asked. That's who came up most right away.
Right. But she knew she was going to be asked or she was on that list, right?
Yes,
that's
what
she put out that, right? Like, I'm not interested. But when it was when they were talking about for the 2 weeks, we're going to have an open convention right before the DNC, they were talking about Newsom, Whitmer, Mark Kelly, Harris, right? She didn't come out, Whitmer didn't come out and say, oh, no, I'm not interested. I'm going to be focused on, you know, being the governor of Michigan. No, she did not say that at all until it came to the VP shortlist. Then she's like, no, I'm out. These other people, I'm sure, said, I'm out because Tim Walz, really? You look at Elmer Fudd and you're like, where did this guy come from? I think Shapiro, going to your original question, Shapiro wasn't decided against. And I think Roy Cooper in North Carolina also was another one. These people were not decided against. They decided against, right? Harris didn't make the decision on them. I think they said, no, we're out. We don't want to be a part of your, you know. Because, look, if they were the VP candidate, right, like Tim Walz, he's not going to run in 28 if they lose this time around. That would have been instead of Shapiro, that would have been instead of Cooper, Whitmer. If they lose this election cycle, whoever that VP slot person was, they're not running in 2028. They're kind of branded as a loser, right? So I think they just realized, no, I'm not interested. And that goes to show they see the electorate. The Gallup party ID is Republican plus 2 to +3, +4 for the first time in almost 40 years. I think it was 1984. Yeah, so it was during Ronald Reagan's time. And Republicans tend to win elections when the electorate party ID is Democrat plus 3. Now we're 5 percentage points to the right of that. And I'm talking party ID, not voting. Party ID, people saying, I'm a Republican.
Right, right, right. And you know, Gene, if you see, when I saw the three candidates, Mark Kelly, Tim Walz, and I researched him, I'm like, oh, this is Josh Shapiro. Because, look, I didn't know much about Tim Walz, but we all knew Mark Kelly's nothing but a tool. He does as he's told. He spews it. He's literally another Kamala, just an old white version of her. You know, in terms of his political career. So I just thought, you know, when I read up on Tim Walz, I'm like, wow, he's Uber left. They really need that Jewish vote. And I'm like, oh, boy. So I don't know. Well, let's move on here. So our final topic here. I wanted to briefly revisit the 60 Minutes election interference. Let's play that real quick.
All right, you want me to play this clip?
Yeah.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
But it seems that...
Okay, so my quick take before we get into their response and what they're saying is simple. She was unsure. She was measured. She was trying to recite her memorized lines the first time. So she didn't look like somebody... She did not look presidential. Her second time, decisive. You know, I'm going to bend them over like I bent with... She's a decisive, very presidential. And that's what they wanted to show. Your quick thoughts before we show CBS's response to this.
Yeah, when she was talking about movements, I'm like, what? All movements? What is she talking about? Movements prompted by or otherwise instigated or alternatively prodded by along or someone suggested. I'm like, what is she saying? Okay, yeah, that speaks for itself.
So, and what triggered this response by CBS is, and they're trying to blame Trump. It wasn't Trump. Trump started it. But Trump accused 60 Minutes of deceitful editing, which it was. She did not look presidential. They wanted her to look presidential on that interview. And 60 Minutes gave an excerpt. Let me show that regarding that. Whoa, where'd it go? Poop window, sorry. And I'm going to read it. 60 Minutes statement regarding Kamala Harris edits. And what I'm saying, election interference. Former President Donald Trump is accusing 60 Minutes of deceitful editing of our October 7th interview with Vice President Kamala Harris. That is false. 60 Minutes gave an excerpt of our interview to Face the Nation that used a longer section of her answer than that on 60 Minutes. Same question, same answer, but a different portion of the response. When we edit any interview, whether a politician, an athlete, or a movie star, we strive to be clear, accurate, and on point. The portion of her answer on 60 Minutes was more succinct, which allows time for other subjects in a wide-ranging 21-minute long segment. Remember, Mr. Trump pulled out of his interview with 60 Minutes, and they're deflecting here, just like she does. Remember, Mr. Trump pulled out of his interview with 60 Minutes, and the vice president participated. Our long-standing invitation to former President Trump remains open. If you would like to discuss the issues facing the nation and the Harris interview, we would be happy to have him on 60 Minutes. Okay, G, my first take, paragraph where they say that it's false, it's not false. It is true. It is, the proof is in the pudding. The portion of her answer on 60 Minutes was more succinct. They're lying. When you do an interview, as somebody who worked in the news with my previous business, you don't take a completely different section, just as it's the same answer or similar, and replace the original answer. You take, she was asked a question and she answered it. That question. They didn't like that answer, so they found something that was similar from a different portion of the interview and they replaced it. That is election interference in my eyes, because they were trying to portray her and show her in a different vein. To me, there is no excuse except that one reason. We want Latinos. We always look towards the man in charge as somebody above us, smarter than us, somebody who's going to represent us. And we want, it's called a term. You want them to be seen as presidential. That's my take. Then they deflected. They pulled the old leftist Obama trick there. Old leftist current Kamala trick. They went, who did they go back to? Instead of dealing with it, they went back to Trump. You know? And why shouldn't Trump do the interview? Because we saw how they treated him the last three interviews. It's like they are on their knees. I say that because I'm an ex-sailor. And that's how I literally picture them. On their knees for Obama, Kamala, any Democrat. And they are fighting and pulling nails, pulling teeth when they're dealing with Trump to embarrass him, to denigrate him. So, you know, they say now that this is a CYA statement. Your take.
Yeah, so the mainstream media, their bias doesn't show in necessarily how they report on a story, but they report on it, different angle of it, or ignore another angle of it, or they ignore a story altogether, right? And this is just part of that. They take a statement and say, okay, no, we don't like that part of the statement. We'll just start here. And that is deceitful editing. I mean, if we want to have a president who deals with our foreign adversaries in the strength, with the strength, and have like confidence to go in there and get what's best for America, we need someone who's strong and secure and confident. But this first part of her answer shows that she's not. I mean, she's sitting with a reporter. So if she's sitting there eye to eye with Putin, she's like, well, we need you to make some movements.
No, she was, you know, well, it's, you know, you know, some movements, you know, and he's like, bomb bullet. I mean, that's what you're get. Actually, her translator will probably be like, that'll be paid by the hour.
Right. And then part of it is all the cackling, right? I mean, even Putin's making fun of her laughing. So it's like, she has no credibility. And I think the little sugar high was all about, well, maybe she will be a strong president. And everyone knows we had a world war where possibly starting if we don't handle everything correctly. They want someone at the helm that's going to like calm things down, bring down the temperature, make America strong again. And, you know, I don't think they're seeing that's coming from her. And 60 Minutes knows that. When they first put out that little promo, which is the first answer, was part of their promo, right? Yeah. They're just trying to get people to watch. And all of a sudden, people go to watch and they're like, wait, where did that answer go? The movements. I want to hear more about the bowel movements. That was otherwise prompted by, or somehow a laxative made, you know, made smoother. And I mean, I don't know what she was saying, but it is deceitful editing. And for 60 Minutes to end that with, remember, Donald Trump didn't ever come on. Like, wait.
That has nothing to do with it.
That had nothing to do with it. Absolutely. And yeah, okay. And in fact, they talked about being accurate, right? And 4 years ago, Leslie Stahl's like, no, the Hunter Biden laptop story is fake. It's false. You're just making stuff up. Turned out to be true. And Trump wants an apology before he goes back on his 60
that's
Minutes,
right.
And they won't do it.
That's right. He said they will come back on. So, and he's in the right.
Yeah.
You know, the final question to you, how did we change and get the media to do what's right again, to be the champion of the people, to be unbiased? What's your take? What do you think?
I don't think you can. The genie getting that genie back in the bottle, I should say, everyone's saying Walter Cronkite was his, you know, centrist back in the day. No, he was
leftist. Yeah, but
they were just able to hide it because you couldn't hear the other side, right? Someone challenging them. You can't get that back in. I mean, maybe social media saying, you know, BS, 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 that's not true, Leslie Stahl, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe that might work, but I don't know. Their viewership's going down anyways. I mean, I get most of my stuff from X right now.
Right. I think the only way it changes is impeaching these activist judges who protect them when they're sued. I mean, Sarah Palin had a great case, and they protected the Times. I mean, they went way above, and they say this, we have to protect the First. They want to protect the First Amendment of people who lie and throw and take away the First Amendment of the average American, you know? So the fix is it. And my take is simple. You start impeaching some of these judges, which Congress has the power to do because those judges are in power because of Congress. You know, the only court that Congress does not control is the Supreme Court. Every other court below that is there because of Congress. And if they started impeaching and removing and charging, and I'm not talking about everyone just because you disagree. I mean the ones that blatantly cover for this activism, because that is why they do it, because there's no accountability. To me, that'll never happen. That's the only way. So in a way, I'm saying what you're saying. But that said, CBS has been in such turmoil over the last 15 years with Redstone or whatever his name is, and it's not the force it was. And the diminishing returns, newsrooms lose money over and over, and if people stop completely watching these newsrooms, which is what they're starting to do, and 60 Minutes is a shadow. They sit there and denigrate what James O'Keefe is doing. I'm like, yo, what, Emmy's doing the same thing back in the 90s. You know, I'll never forget the auto transmission one where they had the perfect car going in and the guy goes, oh, you know, your transmission, blah, 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 blah. Really? My name is Dan Rather with 60 Minutes. And here's a letter showing my transmission's bad and it'll work. So the fact, I think they are creating their own doom, and I'm glad. I'm happy because we evolved. I mean, when I was a child, we always joked and ragged on each other. I got the K-Bar Blue Light Special. Why are you cracking on me, man? I saw you getting that other Blue Light Special there. What, Target, Walmart replaced it. We evolved, things changed, and it's dying. And I for one, am that. It's like, my comment before I get the last word is Chris Wallace, when asked about Tucker, well, you know, I have my own show. I'm still alive. I'm like, dude, nobody watches you. He gets hundreds of millions of views. He's the future. He's his own boss. He can do his own thing. He's making millions. You're embarrassed. You got your job because of daddy, and we all know it, and nobody watches you, and CNN Plus was pulled before it started, and you were supposed to be one of the showcase. That, to me, his lack of seeing the obvious, and he's a reporter, tells me everything I need to know about today's show. You need a final word here, my friend.
Yeah. So I'm not going to get the names or all the details exactly right here, but to go back to the founding of this nation, and there was a newspaper, and I believe the newspaper was very pro George Washington, and I forget what the newspaper was called, but I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who's getting tired of it, saying this is all propaganda, and he started his competing newspaper, and I believe those details are roughly accurate. And so now you had the left and right of the day, right, and competing newspapers, and they all presented their viewpoint. I don't think that's ever going to be solved. I think having social media here like this, I think that helps. But I think you're always going to get that.
Question, do you think the left will win the day and literally control the internet / social media platforms will continue to drop their leads to the left? I mean, do you see that battle continue, or do you see a resolution where the social media?
There's always going to be a battle. I mean, this American, you know, this American government is an experiment, and it's still running, and we don't know when it will end. But look, Elon Musk lands in England, he's going to be arrested for something he tweeted a couple months ago. I mean, you think of like, okay, which country would have free speech? Like us, you would think England. They don't. They don't have free speech. You can get jailed for something you posted on X from another country. I mean, so this free this experiment of free speech, free thought. You have Hillary, Harris saying, if you're not responsible with what you say, your privilege will be taken away from you. If that's the way these high politicians at the highest level think, it's only a matter of time. I mean, who's protecting it right now? Donald Trump and Elon Musk and J.D. Vance.
Yeah, you're right. If Trump wins, I would go to Elon. You're flying to England. The moment they arrest you, we're going to arrest every freaking one of their political ties. Everyone who's English is going to be arrested and will deport their asses because they need us. We're the ones who fund their military. We're the ones who keep them safe. We pull out, they're done. And then we take all our nuclear protective armaments with us. And then we do what Johnson did to Panama. We don't just turn over all the buildings. We blow them the bleep up, and then we leave. And then, you tell them that. It's like Trump. You know, Daniel, you got to bet. They start a thing. You know, you hit that in the head. And that'll never happen. But that's how you deal with that. Europe is not our friend anymore. That's what people fail to understand. They are no longer our allies. They are just another nation. I get sick and tired when I hear we have a special status with it. No, we don't. You know, and I get sick and status when I hear their former prime ministers. Yeah, it's World War II anniversary day. We saved the world. We? What the hell are you talking about? We? You know, y'all didn't say Shaq Squire. It was our boys at Normandy. Y'all are twiddling your thumbs, sending one person for every 100 we sent. You know, Winston Churchill wanted us in that war because they knew you guys were doing what they taught us during the nuclear age. Sit down, cross your legs, bend over, and bam, you're going to die. You know, so that I loathe the Brits when it comes to politics and things like that because they're weak. They hated us. They tried to take us out. Not much. People forget, about the War of 1812. You know, and they were 60 miles from D.C. I mean, they've never been our friends. They've been bitter, spurned, mean girls. Anyway,
they're not their own friends. I mean, Winston Churchill wins the war in May of 1945, and then he's voted out a month later. I mean, how do you ride a wave of we won the war, we beat the Nazi war machine, and then you lose the election, right? I mean, to be fair, he won it back 5 years later, but how does that happen? I mean,
like I said last week, people. During terrible times, a strong rise, and once peace is made, get the hell out of here, Bob. We don't want you anymore. You know, that's human nature. The weak, because the weak are connivers. The weak are Eddie Haskell's. They're Bill Clinton's. Because Bill Clinton had a great presidency only after the Republicans took Congress. Anyway, we had a hell of a show, G. It was supposed to be 30 minutes, 20, 30, 40 minutes, we said. But good show. To the audience out there, do not forget to like, share, and subscribe to Fire It Up. And thank you. Our audience is growing. So is the average duration viewing time. So we thank you for sticking around. Again, do not forget to share, like, subscribe. And you can find this video and others at it again at GrownLeaguesMedia.com as well as our social media platforms. I'm sorry. I'm looking for the show closer here. Our social media platforms, Apple, Pandora, and Spotify. Damn, I'm throwing the Spanish accent around. You'll find them under our profile handle, Grumblies Media. I am William Del Pilar here for G. Mangani and Fired Up. And until next time, we bid you adieu.